Welcome to the Agency of the Month, Department of Energy, sponsored by Leidos. Now, here's your host, Tom Temin.
Fossil fuels may seem out of vogue to the Tesla generation, but they still provide most of the power needed to support the U.S. economy. The Energy Department's Office of Fossil Energy is looking for ways to take better advantage of the nation's abundant supplies, yet advance environmental stewardship. Joining me with more, Doug Matheny, Special Advisor to the Energy Secretary for Fossil Energy. Mr. Matheny, good to have you on.
Thank you, Tom. I'm glad to be with you.
Tell us, what are some of the new features of fossil energy policy at the Energy Department?
Tom, we're going to be doing early stage R&D, which means we're going to be doing the most high risk, low probability of advancement that you can do. Most companies do not want to take those kinds of risks. That's the job of the federal government.
Give us an example of the type of research that might be undertaken here in the fossil fuel area.
We are looking at advanced materials to increase the efficiency of power generation for both coal and natural gas. When you increase your efficiency, you are creating a better fuel supply, and you're also being more environmentally protective.
In other words, you can build a plant for generating electricity in such a manner that for a given, say, number of kilowatts, it uses less coal or less natural gas?
It uses less coal, less natural gas. We will probably be taking off the CO2 with our carbon capture and utilization process. And with doing that, we will be creating an additional revenue stream for the power generation.
Advanced materials and high temperature materials, anything else?
Well, yes, we're continuing to work on the carbon capture technology in order to improve it and make it more efficient as time goes by.
And how does that work right now? Do you work in concert with, say, the EPA, which sometimes, I mean, they're the ones that issue the regulations on what carbon capture technologies that plants have to install?
We do not work directly with them, but we know their rules. Therefore, we're trying to make it so industry can meet those rules in a reliable and cost-effective way.
So in other words, part of the energy future would be trying to find a cheap way to capture carbon without offsetting, say, the efficiencies in terms of costs that you might get from the modern materials.
Yes, we want to do it in a very efficient way, which does reduce the cost and helps the environment at the same time.
Tell us about the Petranova plant. I guess that's one of the success stories.
Thank you very much. I do appreciate that. Petranova, we are very proud that Petranova came in on time and on budget. It has also been made, believe this or not, Plant of the Year for Power Magazine in August of 2017.
Well, what is it and where is it?
It is in Texas. And what it does, it produces 240 megawatts of power generation. It captures 90% of the CO2, and they take the CO2 and use it in older oil fields to bring out oil that industry has not been able to remove. So they're increasing oil production, they are reducing CO2, and they are creating electricity in a clean and efficient way.
Now, you've mentioned research into power plant technologies, both for the inputs and the outputs of power plants. What about transmission means, storage means, and are you working in the transportation area at all in terms of research for fossil fuel consumption?
Basically, we are concentrating just on carbon storage at this time. Like, we have Archer Daniels Midland, which is an industrial plant in the Illinois Basin, and they are sequestering the carbon capture in a very safe manner while they're making ethanol at the same time. So we are able to both create ethanol, which helps the car industry, and at the same time sequester the CO2 into the ground, into a saline cavern in the ground.
When CO2 is captured or sequestered, is there any use for it, possibly?
Maybe at some time in the future, absolutely. we sequester it. At some point, we may want to take that out and use it in the future.
Now, earlier we mentioned, you know, I mentioned in the lead the idea of Tesla, electric cars and so forth, becoming the vogue. They're not really the mode of transportation in terms of percentages of cars on the road. But let's presume for a minute that some measurable portion of the cars have to be recharged every night. That recharging comes from the electrical grid, which is connected to the power plants we've been discussing. So is there a driving theory behind this that if more and more things like cars and different types of motive activities require recharging, then the more efficient the power generation is to supply the AC to that recharging, then really the more benefit there will be from all of this electric activity?
You're absolutely correct there, Tom. Here's what a lot of people in your audience and out there in the world do not understand. 80% of all our electricity produced is produced by fossil fuels. So the more efficient and cleaner we can make it, the better off we are.
The research that you will be undertaking, will this be done under contracts? Will it be done under grants? And who do you expect to be doing the research?
We're doing early stage, which is the high risk, low return. Most of that is going to be done through our national labs and NETL. And along with them, we'll be using universities. That's where most of the money will be going.
And are there any projects underway right now that are initial for this?
We have projects going constantly, sir. We never quit trying to develop ways to help the fossil fuel energy areas.
Doug Matheny is a special advisor to the Energy Secretary for Fossil Energy. Thanks so much for joining me.
Tom, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
We'll post a link to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. I'm Tom Tennant.
For 40 years, Leidos has seen firsthand the Department of Energy's men and women solve our country's toughest energy, environmental, and nuclear challenges. In support of DOE's mission, our technical experts and scientists have delivered trusted solutions in infrastructure management, nuclear security, and IT modernization. Leidos has the experience DOE can count on, and we're ready for your next 40 years. Learn more at Leidos.com/DOE.
The more supercomputing capacity the world has, the more it seems to need. Now the Energy Department has awarded contracts to 6 companies. It wants them to develop the first exascale computer, a machine capable of performing a quintillion calculations per second. Joining me in studio for the hows and whys of this project, the director, Paul Messina. Dr. Messina, good to have you on.
Good morning. Thank you.
What is the goal of this program?
Well, the goal of the Path Forward program that you alluded to is for the 6 companies who got contracts to develop technologies that are likely to lead to commercial exascale computers that will be installed at the DOE National Laboratories, as well as, you know, later by other sites.
And these are contracts, not grants?
Correct. These are contracts for research and development. So they're not contracts to build an exascale computer system, but to address the challenges that are in the way of getting to a practical, affordable exascale computer system.
And what are those challenges? I imagine power consumption of such a machine.
Absolutely, Tom. The 4 key challenges that we focus on are indeed power consumption. If you were to build an exascale system today with today's technology, it might require 0.5 gigawatt.
That's like running Milwaukee for a night.
Indeed. That would cost, just the electric bill would be $500 million a year.
So that's not going to happen.
So it's not realistic. So power consumption is one. And so to do that, more innovative circuits, more innovative system design. And then to get this quintillion operations kind of goal, you have to have even more parallelism than we have now. I mean, today's systems have, you know, to a million to a few million hardware pieces that are working all the time. Multiply that by 1,000 almost. So billion-way parallelism. So how do you tackle that? Well, with better design of the pieces of the system, better ways to connect them, because you're talking about lots of things that have to be talking to each other. We have to worry about how to program a system with a billion-way parallelism. A couple of other challenges are memory. You know, as the speed of computing goes up, unfortunately, the technologies for memories have tended to not speed up at the same level. And so now you have all this computing power, but you can't get data in and out. So data storage and memory is another big challenge. And so some of the research will be aimed at that. And then finally, reliability. When you have that big a system, that many parts, you want it to be, to a user, still pretty reliable. So a piece may fail every so often, but the average user, we're hoping, will not see a failure more often than, say, once a week, if that much.
Now, you've got six different companies: Advanced Micro Devices, Intel, IBM, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, NVIDIA, I guess started out as a graphics company, and Cray.
Correct.
There's some competitors in here. So how do you, from a program standpoint, how are you dividing the duties so that they don't butt heads with one another?
Well, they don't work together in this program, the Path Forward program, which is part of the Exascale Computing Project the Department of Energy has. We issued a request for proposals last summer, and we got 14 proposals. We selected six, and within those six, we selected specific things for each of those six companies you named to do some specific research and development. So they're each working independently because, of course, you know, there's a proprietary work going on. However, we in the Exascale Computing Project manage each of the contracts with the individual vendors very tightly, you know, both to see their progress and also because we want the potential Exascale applications to have an early view of what the technologies might be and the architectures might be, and the software developers for the libraries and so on to also be engaged in reviewing the progress of these companies.
Yes, because I guess if they're developing something that's unprogrammable, you'd want to know that pretty early.
Exactly.
And you also expect the companies to put in some of their own hard-earned cash, too, not just the governments?
Right. The companies all had the opportunity to have everything be strictly proprietary or be able to contribute about 40% of the total cost. And that's an arrangement that we've had with companies in the past in this context of computer companies. It works out pretty well. So they put in quite a bit of their own resources because they're very interested in this, and they get, you know, the appropriate IP rights.
We're speaking with Dr. Paul Messina, director of the Exascale Computing Project at the Energy Department. And once this thing hopefully is operational somewhere down the line a few years from now, what do you envision as the types of challenges in computing that it could take on?
Well, one of the wonderful things about computing, which is what attracted me early on in my career, is that it can be of benefit to so many different areas. So certainly, you know, at a high level, you know, scientific discovery, you know, astrophysics, for example, to determine, you know, how the universe evolved, how the all the elements that we're made of were formed. Energy assurance is a big one. You know, it has to do with so many aspects of it. For example, much more efficient combustion of internal combustion engines, development of new biofuels, more efficient wind energy, for example, being able to control the electric distribution grid in the United States is a big challenge. And for it to be able to take in these intermittent power sources like solar and wind energy. Economic competitiveness, you know, a lot of major products that companies make, jet engines, airplanes, automobiles, wind turbines, require a lot of design through simulation on computers, and those can be very complex designs. And, of course, national security, one of the main responsibilities of the Department of Energy is to assure that the nuclear stockpile, the nuclear weapons stockpile, is still reliable. And if, God forbid, we ever need to use it, it would be functional. And that is a massive computational aspect. So at that level, a little bit finer grain, one of the projects that we're conducting jointly with the National Cancer Institute of the NIH has to do with precision cancer medicine. And that's an exciting and obviously very potentially valuable project. So that takes into account, you know, hundreds of millions of records of individual cancer patients, the an individual patient's DNA, and on the order of a million different potential combinations of cancer treatments, and try to determine for this patient, for the type of cancer that patient has, what is likely to be the most effective. And so that's one aspect. There are others as well.
And relative to machines available today, you envision this being how many more times faster?
Oh, so we envision it being about 50 times more more powerful, faster than today's systems on actual applications, not as measured by looking at the hardware potential or by a simple benchmark, but rather on full complex applications that are addressing things that we can't tackle today.
And do you envision this being a single machine in a room somewhere, or is this some sort of a networked operation that would be in many locations?
So this will be a single machine. Well, the first one will be a single machine in one location. There will be more than one. I'll perhaps get to that later. But keep in mind that these systems are made up of many parts. And so you can think of a few hundred cabinets, each the size of a large refrigerator. But they're all connected, you know, very tightly with networks. So it is a single system to a user. The user can use the entire system as if it were a single system, because it is. So software has to play into it, how you program it, but it's not geographically dispersed. Now, the Department of Energy goal is to, of this project, to install the first exascale system in 2021 at one of the national laboratories. But there's also a plan to have, that's another one, potentially in 2021 or 2022. And then later, of course, there'll be more and more spreading throughout the national labs and perhaps industry, other agencies, and so on.
And when these companies come up with what looks like a satisfactory solution to all of these problems, who then would build it? Or will that be a separate contract?
It will be a totally separate contract to build it. And in fact, I'm glad you brought that up, because the facilities that normally house the most powerful computers in the Department of Energy are at national labs. So Argonne National Laboratory, where I'm currently a staff member, Berkeley, Los Alamos, Sandia, Livermore, and Oak Ridge all have, you know, very large facilities. So those facilities will issue requests for proposals. And the idea is that they will get proposals that will be much better, hopefully, because of this path forward contract that we put in. So it'll be an RFP issued by the facilities, not by the project. And so it's separate from the R&D. But the R&D is meant to lead up to the companies being able to propose something better.
So it could be that a market could develop for several companies to be able to build this, and then technology could be much more dispersed.
Absolutely. In fact, that is one of our goals, to keep the U.S. vendor industry highly healthy, and that typically means having several. We'd be delighted to have even more companies that are interested than now.
Dr. Paul Messina is director of the Exascale Computing Project at the Energy Department. In part two, Dr. Messina discusses the considerable software challenges that accompany this hardware. I'm Tom Tennant.
At Leidos, we know you're called to take on the world's biggest challenges. You're a scientist doing groundbreaking medical research. You're an engineer building a sustainable future. Or you're serving your country, sacrificing time with loved ones to make the world a safer place. Your work matters. We make sure you have the tools you need to get the job done. Leidos works for you, so you can continue working for the world. Visit us at Leidos.com.
To build the hardware for the next generation of supercomputing, the Energy Department awarded contracts to six companies, but it has many more vendors to develop software so the hardware can do something. The vendors work in concert in a process called co-design. Dr. Paul Messina is director of Energy's Exascale Computing Project. He says software development falls into two subcategories. First is
applications development. So the applications that are aimed at mission-critical issues, you know, for example, better chemistry, better materials, for example, to design better batteries, you know, that are much more efficient, long-lasting, and light.
Which is one of the grand designs in all of electricity, I think, is some step function improvement in batteries.
Indeed, that is one of them. So these applications are complex. You know, they have a lot of physics, a lot of chemistry involved in general, or in engineering, machine learning in some cases. And so we are funding currently 25 applications across a broad spectrum of areas to get ready for the exascale systems. Now, we still don't know what the exascale system will look like exactly, but we have some ideas. Secondly, the software that's in between the applications and the hardware needs to be developed.
That's the operating system for this exascale?
Operating system is a lot of it, although that actually the vendors typically do most of the development of. We do help with some aspects of it. But above the operating system, there are many other pieces, tools for measuring the performance, for finding bugs, tools for visualizing the results, which often is the only way that you can determine what you've learned, programming languages, libraries for mathematics, so that experts in mathematics implement them as carefully as possible, and the application people don't have to, in every case, develop their own version of that mathematical operation. So the software is in between the hardware and the applications. The applications tell us what they need in terms of types of algorithms and hopefully ratios of memory and computing speed and the type of computing. And so those two additional parts of the project are equally important, and they help drive some of the hardware design. They also have to adapt to the hardware design, where we can't control everything, of course.
Now, you have those six contracts out on the hardware side. Do you also have contracts out for that middleware development and for the application development?
For the middleware development and the application development, the projects were selected through a request for a proposal process within the DOE National Laboratories, to some extent with universities. And so we currently have, as I mentioned, 25 application projects, each with a specific challenging goal. We have 66 software projects going on that hopefully will fill in the software stack for Exascale in collaboration and coordination with the vendors, because they supply some of those things. Some of them also supply mathematical libraries, for example.
And how do they share their progress such that they know what they need to know from one another? Do you have conferences? Is it all online or a combination of both?
It's a combination of both. Certainly we have conferences, there are currently about 900 people, not counting the hardware contracts, working on these aspects of applications and software. That's a lot of people. And so we have conferences and phone calls. Some are in person and some are by video, for specific applications that say, I need, a tool that will help me visualize things of this type and to identify features. And the visualization experts who have projects will then try to meet those needs. We also have online tools that essentially are a living database that all roughly 900 people can see everything in, so that they can easily see, well, who's doing what for fast Fourier transforms, who's doing what for adaptive mesh refinement, and keep the connections going that way. So that's an important tool as well.
Dr. Paul Messina is director of the Exascale Computing Project at the Energy Department. Again, thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Tom.
There's more to the interview covering hardware. Find more information and a link to the full interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Agency of the Month, Department of Energy, sponsored by Leidos on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency of the Month.
For 40 years, Leidos has seen firsthand the Department of Energy's men and women solve our country's toughest energy, environmental, and nuclear challenges. In support of DOE's mission, our technical experts and scientists have delivered trusted solutions in infrastructure management, nuclear security, and IT modernization. Leidos has the experience DOE can count on, and we're ready for your next 40 years. Learn more at Leidos.com/DOE.